I'm going to Good evening. It's 9:09, October 13, 2016, and this is the Committee of Safety Thursday night meeting. Welcome all. Okay. I don't know what we specifically have. I didn't prepare anything. I'm expecting to hear from everybody if they have anything. I know Ollie was talking. I kind of know the subject matter because we talked about that, and that's fine. And how that enters into why we need our committees of safety plays right hand in hand with that. And actually, Ollie, I have an idea that I want to run by you and the people out west. And this is kind of like, you know, it falls right in what the committees of correspondence do, and because, you know, we got these court cases going on. We got all this ridiculous stuff going on in the courts. And really, it's up to we, the people, to fix it. And one of the ways we fix things like our forefathers did was with the committees of safety and the committees of correspondence, because we're an assembly outside of their control, of the corporate control that they've put over us. So, you know, we need to bring things back to our committees of safety out west. All the committees of safety should be banding together, and because we have all these states that these crimes are taking place in multiple states. So, you know, the committee of safety should be cooperating with each other committee of safety if they have a common goal, such as a common problem, is what I should say, because that's what they're designed to be doing, is to be taking care of local and common problems. With this is certainly a local and common problem, even though it's endemic throughout the United States. So we need people to, you know, I want to get transcripts out of the court and different things like that. But there's some very specific stuff I would like. I know that there's master tapes in federal courts that they have to give. And I would like to get a specific master tape on some of these trials for the committees of safety out there so that we can put together something that's going to blow their socks off. I don't want to reveal it on here. But I'll talk to some of the Western people after this about that. So that's something that we need to initiate ASAP, and I'm doing it now because I know there's ears out here that I need to talk to that should get back in touch with me about this project I would like to put on that's really going to blow their doors off. I don't know if everybody knows it, but we've applied for a number, and if we have to go up and pay for that number, we will, in order to file these affidavits in the case. That way, anytime the judge does something stupid, we can file as the people, as the tribunal, into the case, and they have to answer. You know, once we get the index number, you know, even if they say we're not going to answer or dismiss, they have to say something. And that's where they have trouble, because when they answer, they can't answer fundamental principles. So, you know, anything they say, we have the answer for them that they can't answer. So anyway, we need to keep moving, because as things get going along here, you know, this idea that we're going to be taken care of by the government, you know, the government is going to be panicking because they're going to be running out of money just like everybody else. And so where are they going? They're going to go in your bank accounts. They're going to go your municipalities. Everybody is going to There's going to be a shark self-feeding frenzy, and that's what's going on right now. That's why you need your committee of safety, because we got to band together so that we're not picked off in the feeding frenzy. And basically, that's what's going on. We need to share ideas, and we need to organize and communicate. Anyway, I'm going to shut up. If anybody else has anything to contribute, and as far as what's going on with the Committee of Safety or any other pertinent subject, take it away. Now, you can unmute yourself. I just muted everybody so that I can blab here for a minute. You're certainly welcome to hit your *6 and unmute yourself and say something. I see that we have one person, 5159, who's unmuted. I don't know if he's had something to say, but... Or are you unmuted? I don't know. No? Okay, they went out. Anyway, I guess I could.
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead. Who's this?
Hey, I'm in upstate New York, and I just recently ran into to this website and this organization.
Uh-huh.
Currently doing the course right now, and wow, it's a big course. But is it true what I'm seeing? It says that it's in need of current workers.
Well, we're in need we have a lot of different jobs that can be done. There's like something for everyone in NLA to do. You know, we have different committees. You go on the top bar and look through the committees, and you can join them, and you can preview them and see what it is you want to do. You know, and
I have a lot I want to do actually, because I've been through a lot of the horse game, and I've been through a lot of the truck, and I'm not liking it. I got a sour taste in my mouth myself, so I'm looking for. I like this organization because I like the concepts of the common law, the foundations of it. I like that. The grand jury, I want to do what I can do to support that, and I'm calling to find out what else can I do.
Well, look, in order to get the common law grand jury is the answer as far as holding our government officials' feet to the fire. They're the fourth branch. They're the ones that Scalia spoke about. And, you know, we have evidence that this took place even way back in England. The common law grand jury was elected by the people. It was brought over from England, and it was designed to take care of the governance of the people. That's where we plug in and we connect to the Constitution and approve the Constitution and make it better. It's in our juries and our grand juries. And this is an institution and a tradition and an unalienable right. And so they've tried to kill that through the years, but the only way it's going to come back is if we go out there and we do it. Now, you know, all of our forefathers that signed the Declaration of Independence, we know through documentation that the ones that signed the Declaration of Independence, all of them were in committees of safety because it was the only thing that they had available to that to them in order to move the power of the people forward. And essentially, it's like a government outside of the government. But look, we are the government. So anytime we assemble, you could basically, and we are also the militia. All of us, whether you're practicing or you're not practicing, and you know, if you own a military grade weapon, which is a high powered rifle, and you can shoot it, and you're somewhat proficient and you can hit a target, you're actually fulfilling two of the militia clauses, and you don't even know. That's a requirement. Every adult male having a gun, and a female can too, but there's a requirement for males that they have a military-grade weapon and that they are proficient with it, and they have it, and they can carry it, and we've been guaranteed that we can carry it loaded, not unloaded. That's all baloney that was put in later. And the whole idea, you know, there's only two countries that have these unalienable rights still in place, and that's America and Switzerland. That's it. Every other country has got laws and regulations and rules. I mean, we got lots of laws and regulations and rules, but we also have lots of guns. We have a lot of people not complying with the ridiculous rules, as they should not be complying. And the more of us that do not comply with these unconstitutional rulings, that's the quickest way to get it over with. And the other way is to serve on the juries and use the power of your jury nullification, where you do not consent. It's about your moral standing is what it's about. And you got to say, look, I will not be coerced into doing anything that violates what I'm comfortable with in my morality. And I'll take a gun to my head. You're not going to make me do that. And I am not going to uphold something that I know is wrong morally and judicially and constitutionally wrong. But look, you gotta have your morals to begin with in order to do that. You can't stand there and do that if you don't believe what you're preaching. So you gotta walk the walk before you can talk the talk. Go ahead.
Oh, no doubt. I believe in that all the way. But unfortunately, we live in a society where everybody is wanting to take advantage because of greed and jealousy and all these other things. But my question I really wanted to get into was the quo warranto, writ of quo warranto. Now, can any normal person take that up with a grievance that they may have with an official or someone who, say, like I'm a person who may even go into court right now?
Well, there's a problem. I would not tell you to go into court with a quo warranto in your case because, number one, wow, what was that? You're way over-modulated, whoever that was. We got a big noise coming in here. Look, you have to understand common law and how to keep yourself out of their venue. We got a corporate overlay, and when you go in there and you play in their courts, they're going to burn you. And as far
I'm in a situation like, I'm sorry, go ahead. I'm sorry. I'm just saying I'm in a situation right now, and I can give it a brief overlay of what I'm facing, and maybe you may be able to address or maybe give me some correlation about it.
What I would suggest is that you go up on the site and click on the little smiley face, and then see what there's a section there in each problem that you have, and it'll talk you through filling out an affidavit and an application. Now, we're not doing habeas corpuses at this time anymore because we're overloaded with them, and we have important paperwork to get into the courts in order to effect the change. So we don't want to take. They can be done and they can be ready, but we're not going to push them through. However, you fill out that paperwork over there, depending on what your problem is, in order for you to go to court.
Well, I'm basically an affidavit. Okay, yeah, I'm all in the site. I'm doing everything. I signed, I applied. I'm trying to be totally involved in that organization. I like everything you guys do over here, and I appreciate every effort and information you guys provide.
Right. You have to educate yourself, and that's what this is about. I mean, right now we're talking about committees of safety because that's the next necessary thing, whatever's coming down the pike here, and we don't know what day this thing is going to collapse in on us, so we want to have an organization in every county where we're working with the Constitution.
Yes.
And our neighbors, and it is the militia, but we don't use that word because, look at – we're all militia, and they have vilified that M word. So, you know, I mean, look at we are Minutemen. We have a duty to protect the country. And look at, if foreign troops came in, you wouldn't defend the country. You wouldn't defend your town. Of course you would. And so we also have domestic enemies. So how do you defend against a domestic enemy? The domestic enemies don't have guns out at us, although they use the force of law against us. However, you fight the domestic enemies through the juries and the grand juries. That's how you do it. You consent.
So I have a situation in my county. How can I get a hold of a common law grand jury to state a claim?
You won't because we're putting them in. I mean, look at, this thing has to go in baby steps until we get it. And unless everything goes to in the fan, but we have the methodology of doing this. You know, your grand juries are picked at random, and actually I've recently come across something that says that they're elected through a poll. That's the way they traditionally was, although in desperate times, calls for desperate actions, and you have something going on in a community that needs a grand jury right away, you're not going to set up a poll. You're going to go just assemble it among the peers, you know, at random. So that's the type of thing. But you see, you go into those courts, they're not going to recognize your grand jury. That's the problem. And you have to be careful, because if you go in there spouting common law and stuff, before you know it, they'll have you in a mental institution getting evaluated because they'll say you're crazy. So until you can...
Well, I thought the organization did say that they had a common law established in all the 50 states and all the core Monto and the writ of mandamus and everything was sent out, and the officials were supposed to be knowing. I thought the organization made steps towards that and that they were already established.
No, what happened was we got people in every state and counties to vote on bringing back and establishing the administrations for the common law grand jury. That doesn't mean that there's a sitting common law grand jury. What we've done is we've established administrations in every state that are working towards this. Look, until we get in the court and we force them to recognize us, we're not there. They don't recognize us. They think that only the judges can call grand juries. It's so against everything that's American and everything we have in jurisprudence and in Supreme Court rulings is for us, but we have to bring that into the court. We haven't got there yet. That, you see, they don't want to. That's one of the reasons they're not answering our paperwork, because if they answer us, then they have to argue what we're saying, and they can't argue it. So this whole thing is designed to get us into the courts to get accepted. And so what we did, since you can't possibly go in your county and get a common law grand, I mean, if you had a common law grand jury that the judge and the prosecutors and everybody was accepting in your county, let me tell you what, there'd be a line of cars from here to California waiting to get in that court, because everybody knows that it works and they don't want you in there and they don't want it to happen. So we formed a unified United States common law grand jury, which is all the states working together to the ends of getting us in the court, and we're trying to go in the federal court, because the victory we have in the federal court will translate down into all the states, you know, as per the equal protection. So anyway, I don't want to get into this real big, but what you need to do is you need to keep taking the course, read U.S. versus Williams, because he really explains who the grand jury is, how they come to be. You need to get your head around that even before you start to think about, you know, forming a jury. We're not actually forming any grand juries. We're forming administrations so that when it comes time to pick people, first of all, you can't form a grand jury that sits forever anyway. It's formed on a particular need. So the administrators sit there all the time. They administrate. When an issue comes up and we need a grand jury because, let's say, there was a murder or whatever, or government wrongdoing, that grand jury gets picked. It sits there for until there's an indictment or a prescription, and then they're disbanded. Your grand juries don't sit in place forever, because that makes abuse. They're not, you know, they're to be picked of the people, of the peers, and they're supposed to have a time limit, and they're picked for each specific thing. Not to say that they can't do another thing, you know, because somebody can bring them some other wrongdoing while they're adjudicating another one, and they have to take that on also. But then sometimes you even need to make an additional grand jury. Like if a grand jury foreman was brought knowledge that the law was being broken somewhere, and he has a duty at that point to either bring it up to his grand jury, or if it's in another county, he's supposed to go inform that county that they need a grand jury for this specific thing that was brought to him. You should be able to walk in any grand jury that's in session and bring evidence in. They don't want to let you do that, and their grand juries that they're running right now are like puppet grand juries, you know, hence the saying he can indict a ham sandwich, because he can. Because they screen the grand jurors right now to that, you know, that well. But anyway, I don't want to give a lesson.
I'm sorry. Can you hear me?
Yeah. What I was going to say is the purpose of this call is to further getting those administrations and those committees of safety in right now. That's what we're supposed to be doing here tonight.
Well, that's what I'm here for too, because I'm trying to be a part of something to help make change to this
Right. So, look at our Monday night call that we have every Monday from 9 to midnight. Like this call, we try to get in and out of here in about an hour if we can, because we're supposed to be just sharing whatever it is that helps.
This is about an hour?
This is only about an hour. We've run over in the past, but, you know, we got so much stuff going on, we don't want to overwhelm people. So you come on the Monday night call, we have 3 hours, and we got discussions more along the lines of what you need. But like I said, go and read U.S. versus Williams. It's on our front page. Keep educating yourself in the site, and you'll understand more. I could tell by the questions you're answering, you haven't quite got what we're doing. There are no formed grand juries in any counties right now. And what we're doing is we are the unified common law grand jury. We are filing papers in the federal court. We just took a number out, which is going to, we've been sending them stuff and they've been unlawfully losing that paperwork. So now we said, okay, we're going to come in. We're going to roll over and play it your way. We're going to follow your rules, even though that you should not be able to charge us for justice. And we are the people and we are the tribunal, but we'll pay the $400, we'll get the number, and then what are you going to do when we do that? How are you going to answer us then? You see, that's where we're at. They don't want to answer us, and it doesn't matter, because what we're putting in is going to, you know, it's going to be in the public record.
Is that
so,
the case with Eric Garner you're talking about?
Well, that's another. Well, that one there we indicted, but we couldn't do anything because we need to. That's one of the cases that will probably be filed under this docket number that we're getting in the federal court. Absolutely, that was a horrible thing. So I wanna see if anybody else has anything. I'm sorry. What was your name?
I'm Al. I'm upstate New York.
Al in upstate. Well, I'm in New York too, so. You should look me up, maybe give me a call, we could chat. What part of upstate are you in, if you don't mind?
I'm in Broome County.
Broome, okay, so I'm in Green. So I got an so well you're out in the you're out Broome is out in the sticks, man. It's nice out there.
Yeah.
I'm further down in Saratoga County. This is Harley. Originally from Vermont, going back to Vermont.
Yeah.
Anyway, hello, buddy. If you want some other people to talk to, I'm down here, Albany area, outside of...
I've been in Albany.
Harley's a good man, too. Harley has a lot of knowledge. He'd be a good one, you know, if you got to bounce something off him. Harley's fought the good fight. He's doing it right. And look, we learn something every day.
I'm getting old, Harley.
Another thing, buddy, to think about is, as well as trying to join or form a committee of safety in your area, is the ham radio initiative. I just ordered a radio. I'm going to go online and get a course and get my official number and all that stuff.
Yeah. I lost one of those because of a long story. I lost one of those. I had it in it. Taken away. A lot of my stuff has been taken away. That's why.
Well, communication's important, especially if communications go down. If we're going to save this nation and save our counties and our communities, we're not going to be able to do it very well if we can't communicate. If the cell phones go down and the infrastructure goes down, which it could, look at it, could go down for a little while or for a long while. I don't know. But either way, communication is necessary in the short term and in the long term, and ham radio is really the best answer for that.
I recommend keeping your ham radios also. I ain't mean to interrupt you, but I don't recommend anybody listening, everybody, to recommend them to keep it in like one of those Faraday cages too also.
Yeah.
Right.
How do I get a hold of you guys in New York, man? Is there an email I can reach, or I can reach out to anybody?
Are you on the main website?
Yes.
You'll find each of us listed there. I'm listed under Southern Vermont and New York. You know, a lot of times we'll put our phone numbers up there. We really don't care. I try not to post emails anywhere on the live web because you'll get spam email. So you're not going to get those except for getting them directly from us, probably.
Hey, I appreciate it, guys. I'm going to try to keep in touch, and hopefully everything goes good.
All right. I have an NLA email that you can write to that's out there, and I don't care. And that's Gerard, G-E-R-A-R-D, at nationallibertyalliance.org. And you can try it there.
Right. Okay,
but, we're all pretty close. So look at we should be working. We should be helping each other with communities of safety. You know what I mean? We should be trading ideas. Actually, that's what this call is about, is networking. And I mean, look at, if you can't get local people, then you have to go further out, and then eventually you come back in. You know what I'm saying? Like, if I can only get a hold of Harley, and I got to go up to Albany, which is only, it's only 30 minutes from me, really. Saratoga might be 45. That's not that long of a drive for me to go, for us to collaborate, so I guess is the proper term. You know what I mean? And support each other. Because, look, if Harley's going to give a committee of safety meeting, you better well believe I'll get in my car and come over there. Just like if I'm going to do one, he'll come down here. That's how we did this thing to begin with when we established a common law grand jury in each county. We drove to those counties. We brought people in. Sometimes we had 50 people. Sometimes we only had 3. It didn't matter. The people that showed up voted. We filled out the forms. They did the affidavits, the swearing. We got all the paper. Look at, our forefathers did the same thing. It wasn't a majority vote when they set up this country. They put things out there, and people showed up, and whoever showed up voted, and that was that. It's a representative government. You know, we put everything in the paper. We put notices in post office. We publicly announced. And so some of them, like I said, 50 people showed up. Some of them only 3. The ones that had 3, we didn't stop and say, well, let's wait till we get more people. No, we moved it ahead, and we said, look at you guys, you got to go out and get some more people now. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's how you do it, and that's what you need to do up by you. I don't know if anybody else has anything as far as related to this.
Well, I wanted to chime in on the subject for you guys, if you don't mind. I've been attending on Wednesdays a tri-state meeting out west, where 3 states felt that they were a little stronger together, they're working committees of safety. And then another interesting twist, while it's on my mind, is they're getting really close in court, in what they call the Crown Court in Britain, which is the last remnant of common law, and the conspiracy fraud of this usual suspects around the world, you know, controlling everything from LIBOR on down. Not to take this call particularly into a rabbit hole, but to get back to really immediate on-the-ground things we can all do. Their cases stem from being kind of harassed for being truthers. They get them for weird things like malicious broadcast, you know, and it's just basically putting up some YouTube videos they don't like. And, so they've got George Patterson and, just George Lees and John Patterson, George Lees, a whole bunch of people that are really digging in. The latest thing they just did was release a big list of prominent bar lawyers and masons. And unfortunately, that was the kind of Dennis Serpents I found underneath the woodpile, where the foreclosure lawyers and the courts seemed to be colluding on my thing with probably the heads of the police, yet they've not admitted to being masons. But the other thing is, even though they slowed down habeas corpus, I think that you, John, everybody would agree, we all need to have basic common law ways to fight back, demand jury, which is jury, trial by jury, not jury trial. Trial by jury means 12 plus, standbys and the whole 9, and slow down the courts and stack this kindling up at their feet. And that's what they've been doing with all the child disappearance stuff, the terrible CPS taking people's kids, the drug running, the fake mining companies where they hide all the money and then they keep taxing people like they're broke, and on and on and on, but it's still connected to the same exact style of doing business and really a lot of the same suspects. So I'm just admonishing people here to not give up their fights, file your paperwork, demand jury trials. I'm trying to find out questions. What would you ask if you're allowed to help do jury draw? That's a reality. If you're in my position where I'm defending myself against unlawful trespass and that I always wake up in, that the house that I built, you know, that they threw me in jail so that the bank can take retribution and bulldoze. So they were really bad behavior, and all the courts that refused to answer all had that shit hanging over them, and they really don't like seeing me show up at all. They really want me to dismiss
Albany.
Yeah. But Southern Vermont's where I'm fighting for 90 acres on the deer field to get back and restoration and all the destruction and pain and suffering. And I got my teeth in their ass, you know. I'm sorry. Anyway.
Did you do? Okay, yeah, you said we only got an hour. I'm not going to. I got a lot of questions because I've been through a lot of this stuff, too, and I heard a lot of stuff. So I'm
Well, Monday's good for a lot of the general stuff. Tonight we're trying to get, like, action items, but I just wanted to put that action item out there, you know, stay in court, and can we find out who our local Masons are? Who are the people tripping up and, you know, following orders and not doing due process? You know, look for places where they don't do follow protocol. That's usually where the, you know, corruption begins. So anyway, my piece.
Hello, Gerard.
Oh, is he muted?
Doesn't know he's
muted.
Hello?
Do you have a question, Terry? Or a comment?
Yeah, I just wanted to kind of give you an update on the Oath Keepers situation. And I just wanted to read something that I saw on American Free Press, and there's a connection, like, between what, you know, the article and the memo from the Department of Homeland Preparedness. The reporter says in this article regarding the Bundy situation is that many mainstream media reports, like those in the Times, have been larded with loaded descriptions like right-wing militia and anti-government, making it difficult for a fair trial to ensue in Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of similar with what we're getting from the Department of Homeland Preparedness. As you know, I just, you know, for the benefit of the listeners, I just want to tell them what the NLA, what the department is saying about the NLA. It says here, the National Liberty Alliance, a sovereign citizen group claiming approximately 20 members in New Jersey. I don't know where they got their numbers, but in any way, it says, focuses on creating common law grand juries, asserting the authority to conduct investigations, issue indictments, and remove public officials from office. NLA has publicly encouraged members to intimidate government officials by engaging in criminal activity. So, you know, that's a pretty libelous statement. And,
absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
I was wondering, you know, because I talked to Ed Durfee Monday morning, and he said that they were going to have a private conference call with the leadership of the Oath Keepers. And I'm actually going to be meeting him on Saturday. They're having their monthly Oath Keepers meeting. And I might get some more information at that point because I sent you another article that was in Bloomberg, which said that they are going to be taking some type of action against the department. So that should be interesting. And, you know, I think it's just going to get worse from here. Unless somebody takes some kind of action against this department, they're just going to be continuing to defame and libel anyone who believes in the Constitution. And they had nothing to support their allegations.
No, we are going to respond to that in an official manner. they are going to get pulled on the carpet for that. Absolutely. And you're right. There's nothing substantiated there. I want to know who made that statement. They got to come around with that. You know what I mean? Where did you hear that? We want the names and the dates and everything else. They got a problem, you know, and you see, they think they can get away with that. But somebody's going to have to answer for that.
Absolutely. It's about time. This is the second time they've done that. They in January, they accused us of being affiliated with, terrorism and white supremacists.
Well, I think that was the Southern Poverty Law Center that said that.
Yeah, but they may have said that, but they put it in that memo.
Well, look, they're using the Southern Poverty Law Center for advice. So I don't care where they got it from.
Yeah, well,
we'll add them to the suit, too. We'll sue them all.
Yeah, I think that's about time, too, because the department is putting out these memos every month. You know, so who knows what's coming next?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how many people are reading them, but they're going to use – the bad thing is, you know, they put your face in there, they put your organization, they say you're a person of interest, and then some unsuspecting law enforcement officer that doesn't know any better, he pulls you over, and he's hyperventilating because he's got a notorious, you know, person of interest here, you know, that he just pulled over. That can get us killed.
Yeah,
you know?
They can put you on a no-fly list and all this other crap, you know, and you can't out why you're on the no-fly list.
Right. So, yeah, the only reason we didn't respond yet is because we had so much stuff going down and you got to pick your battles. And so we're already trying to get in the court, you know, in the federal court over there with this whole trial thing out west. And so we kind of let it go, you know, knowing we were going to get back to it. Look, if we get in the courts, all this stuff is going to come out. But in the meantime, we have to do what we have to do to get in there. And I think we're very close to that because people are fed up and the people that are close to the case. Look, you don't need a whole state to come around. Like we don't need a bunch of people in Oregon. We just need a bunch of people that make noise, that participate. To show up, you know what I'm saying? A noisy minority that goes and files papers and shows up, you get 20 active people in Oregon. Oregon is sparsely populated anyway. You get them showing up in the courts and petitioning and putting paperwork in, you'd be surprised what you could do, you know?
Yeah, you know, so, they say that squeaky wheel gets the grease, so I hope
absolutely.
You get a lot of grease out of this.
Is that what the court observer is about?
Our court observers is about when we have our members that get pulled into court in an area, we announce it so that the local people that are in that member's area can go to the court that day and sit there and observe. And that makes everybody nervous. Well, it makes them behave. And then when it's all over, they write an affidavit as far as what went on in the court, because, you know, some of these courts are so corrupt, they'll even change the transcripts. So if you got two or three or five or even 10 people sitting there with legal pads and pencil in their hand taking notes, let me tell you what, they're all nervous because they're not used to that. And it makes that you'd be surprised the difference that you can make when you got court observers when you go to court. Because these guys operate best in the dark. That's turning the light on when you got court observers. And that's been a very successful program for us and our membership. You know, I dare say that that's one of the things that has given us some of our successes, because the judges were unwilling to do the tyranny that they would have done, you know, in the public eye. You know, they would have done outside of the public eye.
What about a video recorder?
They don't let you always videotape. Look, you can get permission to videotape, but you got to let them know ahead of time. In other words, if you want to videotape, the judge has to know. You got to give them, I think, a day or two's notice, and they don't usually. Most of the judges will let you, depending on the case. Like this case out west, there's no reason it can't be video recorded, and I would love, I would love to get the recordings. Right now, I would like to get the audio recordings out of the tape, and we could do something really amazing with that, and we'll put it to a video. You know what I mean? And we'll make our own video using the actual audio out of the court. And I'm telling you, you know, they're making a lot of stupid mistakes now because they're getting nervous.
What I did when I went in my last little deal. I had an audio recording and a video recording. I recorded it both, and I had a witness with me.
Well, the trouble is if they say no video and you come out with a video and they figure out where you were and how you did it, they'll come after you for unlawfully videotaping if they got a rule that says you can't. You know what I'm saying? You have to be careful with a video that you're sneaking in there. Use it for your own thing, or you know, you can't let them, because if they said there shouldn't have been video cameras, you sneak one in there and then you let the tape out. Like, let's say you post it on YouTube or something, they can come after you for that. So
right.
You want to be careful. Oh yeah, absolutely. Look at the court.
You mean
court,
it's an unlawful law? I mean, unlawful.
It doesn't matter because there's rule. Look at that judge. Rules that courtroom. So if he says he's not going to allow video in there, and you sneak one in, look at if the judge said no video and you didn't agree with him, you could put a paper in, you could fight him, you could sue him, you could do, but you can't just sneak it in. It's not a public official like a cop in the street, which they have no right to tell you you can't video. They're working in public. You know what I'm saying? The thing is with the courts, they like to look at if the world was a better place and we had judges that were honorable men, you don't mind giving them the discretion because maybe it's a trial with an underage person, a child, or whatever it is, and he wants to protect them from having their face out there because you got all these ambulance chasers, and he says no videos. Look at how long have they been drawing. You see these major cases like the O.J. Simpson trial? There was no video in there. You got these guys drawn real fast. You see all the little drawings they do?
Yeah.
Well, there's a reason for that. You know, I mean...
But I want to say something. This is Harley. Because you know, we shouldn't drop back to our final position compromise right away. And what I did was I was kind of proactive and a little bit militant about it. I wouldn't let the legal aid people off the line till somebody promised they would play law librarian, look it up, and send me the rules on videotaping. I said I was making my own plea to the judge, which I did, and I couched it in, you know, my disability, which is dyslexia and stuff, and I need more time. And the only limit he put on it, and he gave it to me in writing, I can do my videotaping, is that I can't use it in future court, which I think is funny because once it's, you know, a matter of official record, it just is. You know, it's a fact, it defends itself, but that's beside the point. And I would only do guerrilla taping in an extreme circumstance where you feel like you're really trapped and you should wear some glasses with an eye camera in it. But I accept those risks you're talking about. You know, I'd say try to clear it or, you know, ask for forgiveness later if you, you know, accidentally leave your recorder on in your pocket, you know. But I would use it at discretion, you know.
Well, that's the point I was making, that you don't want to just post that because based on where you're taking that video from. Look, if they want you, they'll figure out where you were. They'll say, oh, he was here and he did this, and they might actually be able to figure out who you were, and then you're going to end up facing a charge. I didn't say don't do it, especially
I'm just saying on the other side of it, too, is that before you ever get to the whole spy versus spy crap is that, you know, I would try to really be out front about what are my rights. Why wouldn't it be a court of record? If it's a court of record, it is. And there's going to be a tape, you know, done by a lady over there who knows stenography, and I'll have access to that, correct? Yep. And we can compare them to each other. Yep, correct. So it's just for my reinforcement. Thank you very much. I'll have justice, and I'll have it clear. If I can't have half a dozen geeks sitting in the wings like I'd like, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know we were using a Supreme Court ruling for our court watchers, the guys that were recording, where the ruling said that if there's a discrepancy in the transcript, that the master tape would prevail, because they all have master tapes in the federal courts anyway. So that proves that they got tapes and they're taping it, you know. And look at all that drawing of people's faces and all that stuff. That was all done way before this technology revolution where everybody has an iPhone and everything's on video. People were more scared of video way back when. And you know what I'm saying? I don't think that they're so sensitive to it anymore. You can't get away from it. They're videotaping you when you go to the court. They got video cameras all over. They got facial recognition. You know, so how could they tell you that you can't tape the thing unless it has something to do with protecting the identity of a victim? Now, the other thing, we did have a judge that said we could videotape, and he said, but that camera better not go and pan the jury, because they want to keep the jury anonymous as much as they can, right? So they don't. They said you better not be turning that camera and panning the
jury. So would an audio recorder be better?
Well, look at video's the best if you can get them to agree to it. But yeah, there's an audio recording, I believe, in every court going on anyway, and they just don't want to let you know that they have it. And what you're supposed to do is you're supposed to go there ahead of time, even the day of the trial, before it starts. You're supposed to tell them that you want a copy of the master tape. And most of the time they'll give it to you, unless there's something really horrible going on that they're trying to hide, and then you can have a fight, you know what I'm saying? But normally you can get that as long as you let them know ahead of time. And you tell them, you know, and if they know, I think they just push another button and they make you a digital copy. Like they'll stick the stick in the machine before it starts. They want to know ahead of time, you know? I mean, you can go back and get those tapes anyway. And when you get them, you want a certified copy. You don't want just a copy. You want a certified copy. You want something stamped that says that this is burned right off the original. Nothing was changed. And it was done under these control circumstances. They actually certify them. I mean, they'll give you a copy uncertified, but what the hell good is it? Because that you know, then it could have been tampered with, as far as they know. So make sure, if you're going to get a copy and you're going to ask for permission, you have it certified. Anyway, this doesn't have much to do about committees of safety, but we went far afield here.
Those master tapes. They deny that they are recording it because they don't want to get into the vending of that stuff, and they really don't like it. But you would have to almost have a flyer in your hand and present them a day or two ahead of time on notice that that's what you're going to ask for.
Well, look at the judges have a certain
discretion serious
in their court to make rules. So when you go in, you're supposed to ask, as far as recording, I think it's 24 hours or 48 hours is normal. I mean, that's just courtesy. And there's no reason for the judge to deny it. But, you know, each judge is supposed to have is responsible for the decor of his courtroom. And if he thinks that camera is going to create a problem, he can say, I don't want it. You understand? So it's not like it's, you know, but yet you know that there's a audio recording. And that's why when we went in with our court watchers and stuff, we brought in the two Supreme Court rulings that says that you could record and that says that they have a recorder. Now, in the federal court, I know for a fact they have it, because they couldn't say that the master tape takes precedent over the transcript if they all weren't doing it. How could you make a ruling? How could the Supreme Court make a ruling like that unless they all have it?
Does the court observe and wear those press IDs too?
Yeah, we have them online where we make up tags and press IDs, or well, not press IDs, but we make up court observer ones. But you can also, there's a place you can go on and get certified and get a press ID, and it's perfectly legal. You follow the rules and you carry the credentials. They can't. It's your First Amendment right. Look at we're all press. Technically, because we can all write and we can all sell stories to newspapers. So, you know, to get a press ID, there's certain things that you follow. There's a site that we found that you go on and you follow these things and you fill this paperwork out and sign this paper, and it satisfies all the legal qualifications to stick a press badge on your chest and have a press card in your hand. and it works very well, and they can't. There's nothing they can do about it. And I would suggest you do that if you're going to be active. And look, sure. That's a good idea. Look at for committees of safety. You know, all the it's funny these things all mesh in. Look at having a press badge and going to these things and being a guy who's recording what's going on in your community. That's a good way to get people in your committee of safety. Because now you got a mouth and you got a face and you're active and they don't know. Oh, who's this guy? He's got. Oh yeah, he's part of the press. You get to talk to people, you know. I mean, you get to make friends, maybe, right?
An amateur court reporter.
That's what I thought that was used for.
Hey, sir.
Yes.
Wanted to ask a question about the idea of having those law quotes available maybe on a page, or it could point us in the right direction to do what you did and sort of, you know what I mean, if we have more resistance. I didn't have a lot of resistance. They ended up sending it to me in the mail, right? I got the law on paper, and I have it returned from the judge because I made the request, you know, in writing for accommodation, and that's how I got it. But you know, everybody could do their own. I just say, start up front that you do want a record and you want it for your own purposes or whatever, but it shouldn't be disallowed unless it's disallowed. You know?
Right, and they should have a good reason for disallowing it, especially
if you're... I understand it could be a sensitive reason, you know? But.
Right. But certainly not in your own case. Right? What are they trying to do? Protect you? I doubt that.
Yeah.
Right?
Does an affidavit and a notice of demand have any place in the common law?
An affidavit is the basis of law because it's necessary. You can't have what they call a prima facie case if there's no affidavit. An affidavit is a sworn statement. And it's considered true on its face, because if it's not true, you just committed perjury. So, you know, when they arrest people, they don't usually have affidavits, a sworn statement that says, I saw so-and-so doing this, this, and that. You know what I mean? And I swear that I saw him commit this crime at this time. That's one of the problems we have. There's lots of people being convicted on no sworn statement, which is a basic right, a basic premise of law, that they have to have somebody willing to swear to the fact that you injured somebody, right? So an affidavit, absolutely most important. And as far as, what did you say, a motion or whatever, those are just rules of the court on how to...
Notice and demand and those documents.
Yeah, notice and demand and all that.
Judicial notice.
Judicial notice, all that stuff is when you learn the procedures of the court, when to file that stuff. You absolutely, yeah, and yes, you can use them in a common law court, absolutely. You know, and not only that, you know, you say in a common law court, look, we could use anything we want in our courts, even their stupid statutes, as long if they fit us and they're constitutional, absolutely we can use them, you know. You just want to be real careful using their system, because if you go in there using their system, what happens a lot of times is you are contracting into their corporate, you know, adhesion contract, and you're basically giving up your rights. And I don't want to get into that whole discussion, but that's, you know, they get you from the first sentence when you go in there, do you understand the charge? That means do you stand under our jurisdiction? So, you know, if you don't understand those type of things, then you really can't defend yourself in court. You're only going to get yourself in more trouble. You know, I mean, I would advise somebody that knows nothing about anything, look at, find yourself a lawyer, because the lawyer will plea bargain you out or whatever, but they'll eat you up if you don't know procedure, you know. And if you go in there just throwing paperwork at them, like judicial notice and this and that, all you're doing is pissing the judge off, and then what you're going to do is you're going to find out just how nasty he can get, and you might get yourself in contempt, and it's just not worth it, you know? So, you know, train yourself or get somebody to coach you, or, you know, if you can't, then you know, as much as it gives me I break out in hives to say it, you're actually better off with an attorney if you don't know anything about anything, you know what I mean? And look at even
right,
if you get
right.
Even if you get an attorney, there are certain things that you can do. You don't have to take his. They want you to be an imbecile once the attorney comes. They don't want you to talk. They don't want you this. But you see, you can fire that attorney at any time. And if you talk to that attorney and say, I don't want this, this, and that, and you get him to agree to it before you go to court, and if he doesn't want to agree to it, you get into court and you say, look, this guy's supposed to be representing to me, and I required and wanted him to do this, this, and that, and he refused. I'm firing him today. I need time to get another attorney, find somebody that knows the law that will do my will. And, you know, that's a good way to stretch a case out, too, because if you say you need time to find a new attorney, they always give you more time for that because they're afraid you'll come back with no attorney and that mucks up their court. You know, the ultimate long and the short of the attorney thing, other than the side of all the other nasty stuff that they do, the main design is that it goes quickly and the money, it's all about money. And if they're, you know, you're pro se litigants, you muck up the works, you clog up the courts. They want you in, out. They don't want a trial. They want an out-of-court settlement. It's settle the scales, man. In this country, you get all the justice you can afford. So, you know.
Well, affidavit to the judge and to the district attorney, is that the same as putting it on a record, or do you have to take it to the clerk?
Well, if you give an affidavit to the judge and the prosecutor, and you don't give, I don't
know. Certified mail.
Well, certified mail. As long as you, no, you have to enter it into the case. Just because you send something certified mail doesn't put it in the case. You have to take it to the county clerk, and you have to get it stamped into the case.
Yeah.
You have to have it filed into the case. And then you have to give it to the judge and you have to give it to the prosecutor. And if you don't, it's considered ex parte, because what happens is that's outside of the court communications, which is not supposed to be happening. But I mean, they do it all the time. And if you catch them, you got to scream about it. There's always ex parte stuff going on. And it's up to us to hold our feet to the fire. And you don't want to do it yourself. So you just make sure everybody knows, and that whatever you do, if you want it in the case, you got to go ahead and give it to the clerk and let her stamp it and put it into the case. That's how you do it.
You file it. I got a cross claim. I got a counterclaim, and I just sent it certified mail to the judge and the district attorney, thinking that was going to be put on the record. And when I looked, none of my documents that I sent them.
No, you're not going to see them either. No, absolutely not. They probably went in a round file, and there's nothing to stop them from doing that.
So how can I retrieve those documents and put them in? Can I retrieve them and put them into the...
You can fix anything you screw up is allowed to be fixed. You could look at, you know what they were. You saved copies for yourself, didn't you?
Yeah, I have a few copies, but some copies when I first started, I sent the originals off.
I would never send it. I always send a certified copy, at least. If the court wants the original, you get them to stamp a certified copy that you could use. And if you didn't put them in right and you want them back, I doubt they'll give them to you. Why would they? If it's against them, they're not going to. They got no reason to give them back. But you can refile them. Redo them, refile them, give them to the clerk. Just make sure you're giving them to everybody. But anyway, I don't want to run this call. We're already at 10 o'clock, and we really have, you know, we're kind of just beating around the edges here of stuff. I don't know if anybody has anything.
You did a lot. You did a lot. I appreciate it. Appreciate it so much, and I appreciate NationalLibertyAlliance.org. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you, too. So, look, Harley brought up a good point tonight, folks. Don't forget about the ham radios. The ham radios also is a good venue to work through with the Committee of Safeties. You know, get your ham radios, get find hams. Go on to the ham radio site and look up people in the area, you know, that are hams, and get talking to them. And because they're all a pretty good group of people, you know. You'll find that they're very helpful, very respectful. They're the kind of people that you would want on your Committee of Safety. They're the kind of people that you would want in your grand jury and your grand jury administrators. They're usually very professional, very moral, from what I found in the years that I was a ham radio operator. And so that's a good, good place to build up your committee of safety. I mean, you can go on that ham radio. There's people talking about all kinds of stuff all the time, and you can start talking about committees of safety. You know, and you're gonna hear people in your area. You know, I mean, look at, if we had a ham radio, there's no reason why Harley and myself and everybody else that's within a certain miles of this area, we couldn't be talking. 50 miles is not a hard thing to do with a ham radio. I mean, you know,
before you get into the big antennas.
Well, what happened is that little Bofang radio, if you get the right antenna on it, I'll tell you what, you can talk, and there's a repeater in the area, you can talk to anybody at just about. Once you learn how to use it, you learn frequencies and wattages and things like that, and you learn what frequency or channel that you're going to be on. Look at a ham radio guy that has a big radio set, he could pull you in. He could take your little signal and pull you in. I mean, even these guys that use the HF and stuff, they're only using something like, I forget what it is, 2 watts or something. They're bouncing around the world. You know, they're talking on low wattage, not high wattage, you know, a lot of them. There's all kinds of ways of doing it. I mean, that's part of the challenge, is to see where you can go and who you can. You know, they have lots of things where you try to make contact with different people. And when you do, they have these cards that you fill out that verify that you talked to this person at that time, and they collect them. I mean, these guys, they got all kinds of ways of making it interesting. You know, and it's all a learning, and you get hooked up with what they call an Elmer, who is usually a guy that's a ham radio extra license. And these guys are always willing to teach the greenhorn, so to speak, you know. But look, don't forget the ham radios, and you know, the best thing to do is get them and start using them so you become familiar. And not only that, you become friendly with the local ham radio people, because in an emergency, guess who you're going to be talking to? Other ham radio people, right? So you might as well get to know them right now, right?
And correct me if I'm wrong, I haven't really gotten into the specs. Usually I'm more on the white papers and stuff, but you can, without a license, you can speak in the CB ranges, and then you can monitor all kinds of frequencies all the way up and down, I think, with these things.
Yeah, you can monitor any frequency that you're able to get now, you know, whatever channels that little radio gets, you know, whatever bands it gets, you know. And it's perfectly, they make radios just for listening, you know what I mean? But you can monitor anything, and there's five, they're not CB channels, they're what's it called? It's public channels that doesn't require a license.
Right, or you below can, a certain.
Well, no, that's the CB. They actually have channels set aside, what do they call them, MERS or something like that? And
there's 3.19.
No, that's not Breaker 1-9 is the CB. These little ham radios have five channels that are set aside for the public that are not, they're not CB, and they're not really ham. And it's an in between.
Okay.
They call it MERS, and one of them is a emergency channel that the people have set up. And in an emergency, you can talk on any frequency, because all that stuff goes out the window, because in an emergency, that's what the thing is designed to do in the first place. So you don't have to
look at that.
If there was an accident and somebody was laying in the road and there was a cop cruiser there and a cop passed out on the road or whatever, what, you can't pick up his radio and transmit on it? They go, oh, you're not a cop? That's not the case. You know what I mean? Absolutely, you could use that radio. In dire, in desperate times, calls for desperate action, right? But anyway, that's just to mention that, you know. And
that's what I was driving at. Is those are normally those?
Yeah, one of those survival tools.
Are with a license. Once you have your call sign and you know the rules of the road, you're tested and.
Right, and that's really what you should do. And even with the license, you can only go in the frequencies that you're licensed on. I mean, that's what the whole thing with with the different licenses, you know, technician license and extra license, that gives you more frequencies that you can use, is what it does.
That'll blur when things get in emergencies too, but
oh yeah, absolutely. But you're still going to end up where everybody
is.
You
need a protocol. You need a starting point. You need to follow the rules that work this long, and they use this all over the world and ships and everywhere. So
well, that's the point that Terry was making, our ham radio expert there, and she understands that the ham radio guys are doing this anyway. So get your radio, get on. And they'll help you. You'll learn. You know what I mean? You just follow what they're doing, and they'll tell you. And it's all going to, you know, we people that don't understand, they think they got to micromanage it. No, you don't. Get your radio, start educating yourself. And the fact of the matter is, in an emergency, all the hams are going to come together. If you have a ham radio practicing and stuff, you're going to be in that loop, and they're going to help you do it.
Yeah.
Because that's what they do best, and if there's an emergency, that's when they really shine. We got guys over here running around with portable things. We got two guys that put up their own repeaters that are run with batteries that have a solar power pack on them. You know, I mean, I know that in my area we'll never be out of communications as far as ham radio goes.
But you gotta, you know what I mean? Yeah, you got one on top. But you got to get one that's protected in case, you know, you heard of the EMPs. Now, I know you guys heard of the EMPs, the electromagnetic pulse. We got to put something prepared that's going to, you know, be protected if one of those goes. So get one on land and get one off land.
Well, look, if one thing ham radio guys are is they're technical. And if there's anything they know how to protect against, it would be an EMP. You can harden your stuff against an EMP. You know, it's just a matter of drawing that pulse off into the ground and not having it go into the machinery. Of course, the best way is to have it behind a cage or in a metal box that's grounded. But the other what the ships and things do is they run another cable up the antenna, and they run it alongside and down, and then they run it into a ground, and that EMP is going to follow that cable because that cable goes directly into the ground, and it's a better conductor than the transistors and the radios and everything else. So that thing, it's like a lightning rod, you know what I mean? A lightning rod on a house. The lightning hits it, and it carries it into the ground harmlessly. An EMP is no different than that. It's electricity, and it's going to go of the path of least resistance. So you can harden your antennas as long as they're shielded and the shield is grounded. You put shielded cable, and you ground the shield, and guess what? It's hardened from an EMP. Now, of course, you got to know where there's other things that are sticking out that might let the EMP in. You know what I mean? You got to make sure you know what you're doing. I mean, it's going to sneak in anywhere it can, and any place that you're sending a wire outside of that box is a potential place for it to slip in, and you need to put some screening there to stop it and all that. But these guys that work on ham radios and do that stuff, they know all that stuff. They know how to do that. You know, it's just a matter of educating yourself, you know, to do that. I mean, repeater that's up on that mountain, the guy that put it there, he knows all about it. And he's probably got some spare parts too. I mean, that's his baby, you know.
I pray we do. You know what I mean? I'm just saying. You know what I'm saying? Because we never even been through really. I don't even think we have the equipment to really test that type of scenario. So I'm just saying. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, you're right. I mean, look, there's all kinds of things you can do, and you can educate yourself on that, you know. I mean, like I said, metal boxes that are grounded, that's a good Faraday cage. You know, you don't want somebody to hear you throw your cell phone in the microwave and close it. But that's not an but the trouble is with a microwave, like if you think you're going to put your cell phone in the microwave and save it from an EMP, it may or it may not. If you got that microwave plugged into the wall socket, that EMP can come down the electric lines outside, come in, go into that microwave through the electrical plug. So, you know, you want to make sure you unplug the dang thing, you know, just a point, you know. So, yeah. Anyway, Look, no doubt. You guys can all educate yourself on that. In the meantime, get busy in your counties getting people talking to your sheriffs. It's important. Now, don't forget, a lot of the sheriffs are up for election now in November. So, you know, you may be seeing some new faces in there, and you're probably going to want to know who those people are before the election. It would be nice to know if you don't know. So that's a...
I was thinking, should I get a big bunch of business cards and try to help and direct people to the website so maybe I can get more people to be a part of the community and this work in the community?
Yeah, you could do that. You could direct them to the website, or you can send them to somebody else in NLA that's local that can talk to them. Anything like that is fine. Any way that you can get them to come to us and get their interest peaked and actually get them to click on the website would be nice, you know. But, you know, don't forget, you know, we got stuff going now where we're going to want to build up our own communities with our committees of safeties and our common law grand juries. And so that's gonna require making friends in the villages and in the towns, you know, so that
right.
when push comes to shove, you got these people on board, you know.
Right.
We don't want a bunch of federal guys coming in and telling us what to do with our resources, you know, because I'm sure they all got better places for our resources than what we think we do, you know. So we can't allow that to happen. So, you know, and your only defense to that is your sheriff. So if your sheriff has been co-opted out by evil people, you're in bad shape. You want to get a sheriff that will uphold the law. He's the highest law enforcement official, and he's elected by the people. So he's your constitutional law enforcement officer, and he trumps the state police. He trumps everybody.
And if he fails, what's our recourse?
Well, there's other recourses, but, you know, you yourself is a recourse, too, you know. I mean, like Harley said, you got to push back. You do have a duty to defend your nation. So if the sheriff fails, best thing you could do is get out there and reveal it and get people lobbying against him. Get, you know what I mean? Look, if he's real bad, push to get him indicted. Don't wait for an election. You know, one of the tricks they played out west, just for a point of interest here, is they made sure that they got sheriffs elected that they had things on that they were doing illegal things, so that when the time came, they could have them step down and they could appoint put their appointed person in, and they planned that from the beginning. They purposely got these guys who had things in their past that they knew when the time came they could bring them out. Drive them out of office, and then they can appoint their own person in. And that's what happened in Burns, New York, and that's how Sheriff Ward got in there, who was an ex-BLM person. And then he was a lackey for Judge Grassley out there, and that's exactly, you know, and I found out there was four or five other sheriffs out there that are appointed. I said, what the hell's going on in Oregon that all the sheriffs are appointed? Well, they had to step down. Yeah, they made sure they got people to run that would have to step down when they revealed what they had on them, you know? And that's the problem with our political system today. The whole committee man system and the politics, all it's done, all that they're using that for is to make sure that nobody gets in there that they can't control. So what they're doing is they're actually vetting criminals for us to put in office. That's what they're doing. Anyway, with that, I think we should close this down because it's getting long, and nobody has anything else earth-shattering. I think we should shut her down. Thanks for coming, everybody.